Good evening, everybody. Welcome to BTE Radio. It is Sunday night. It is November 26th, and we are not live tonight, as you probably figured that out. We are doing this as a podcast tonight in lieu of BTE Radio turning to all podcasting, so kind of an introductory show tonight that we're going to be doing podcasting. Got a very special guest joining me tonight on the program. Marie Samuels is out under the weather. She wasn't able to make it tonight, so I went back to my roots and said, hey, I got to get this guy on the show because he was there at the very beginning. He is the co-founder of BT Radio, former co-host, former color commentator, and still one of my closest friends. And he's back tonight to help us. We were supposed to do a live show, but he's back tonight to help fill the co-hosting chair with me tonight. Let's welcome back to the show the one and only Fork Chop himself, Sean Forker. Hello, Sean. Welcome back to BTE Radio.
Well, thank you for that great introduction, Eric. It's good to be back in my chair. Marie leaves it a little shorter than I do, but that's okay. I was going to try a standing desk, but then I figured if I got too tired, then what would I do? So it's nice to be back at the chair, to be back here with you, back where it all began, Beyond the Edge Radio.
And can you believe it? October 26, 2007, you and I debuted the show, and we were debuting it on Blog Talk Radio. It was 10 years ago that you and I started. Our very first guest was a guy named Rick Fisher, if you remember.
Rick Fisher from Columbia, Pennsylvania. I still talk to Rick. Nice guy. And I remember that show 10 years ago, back when Blog Talk Radio was it. And you know what? Sometimes I wonder, it really wasn't that bad, was it?
No, actually, back then, we actually were able to connect, although the sound was horrible. we had to do it over the phones, if you remember. And do you remember the show we did with John Zaffis? Oh my, what a nightmare.
I do. And I was just talking to the chat room earlier when we were going to go live before that didn't happen. It was talking about when we had Bill Bean on the program and my router burned out and my Vonage adapter died during the middle of the program, if you remember that.
I do.
That ruined one of our shows with Bill Bean, and we always joked that it was the Bill Bean that was responsible for all these technical difficulties after that.
Well, he had that run-in with those dark forces at his home in Maryland, and I think they followed us from that point forward.
I do, too.
What are you going to do? I call it the BTE radio curse, and it's been going on now for 10 years.
It's followed.
Yep. It has.
It hasn't just been indicative to you, my friend. It followed me as we would. We went with Arcane Radio and went live. As much as I love live, and there's the Vince McMahon rule of live entertainment that nothing was an accident, it was supposed to happen. I'm glad to be out of the live radio business at this point. Podcasting is much more controllable and easier to get a good sound from. But it's a lot of fun nonetheless, getting to talk to all these great people. And we've been doing it now. We did it for 10 years with BTE, and we've all done other things. And it's just great to be back with you tonight.
I'm glad you're back. It's like going back to the future, if you will.
Back to the future.
Yeah.
Great thoughts.
It's good to have you back, and it's good to chat and catch up on old times as well as some new times. Our podcast guest tonight is Dr. Brian Parsons, and we'll be bringing him on here in just a little bit. We've got a lot to talk with him about tonight on the show, and he's been gracious enough to come on and chat with us about his new book. He's got 6 books out, actually. You can go to his website, which is briandparsons.com. He has a doctoral degree in spiritualism, I believe. He is the executive director of Paranexus. He has written 6 books, as I mentioned. You can find the name of the books on his website. He's a public speaker. He's lectured all across the Eastern United States. Heck of a nice guy and a very objective researcher. And Sean, we're in for a treat tonight.
Well, I'm excited to talk to Dr. Parsons because we've done an investigation together before, and I never realized it. As you talked to me about that tonight, he and I both had programs on WCJV, Digital Broadcasting Network, and everybody speaks very highly of him, so I'm just excited to get to talk to him a little bit.
Yeah, he's definitely worth having on the show. We tried to have him on in October, and as the curse went as it goes, we had problems with him. We were about half an hour into the interview with Brian, and Skype just quit. We lost him and we lost the feed and then just, you know, so.
Sometimes you just can't win, man. Sometimes you got to roll with the punches. That's
what we do every week, man. We get the show started. Last week we were launching the show and everything was good to go. Marie was all set and then nothing. It just died. But that's what goes on in my house. My house is just it's a fun house. There's so much weird stuff going on in my house. I'm not surprised. I'm not.
I've heard this that you and Kathy moved to a new home, and congratulations on becoming new homeowners once again. And I've heard she had some interesting happenings going on.
Yeah, it still continues. We moved in June, and a lot of people have heard this already, but real quickly, we moved in June, and right from the start, weird things started happening. From hearing things being knocked over or falling in other rooms, and then you go to investigate, see who did it or what caused it, and there's nobody in the room. Hearing, you know, people walking down the hallway or somebody coming up the hallway steps, and there's nobody there. It started out real minute, not a lot to get concerned about, to knocking on the walls, knocking on the headboard of our bed, knocking on the hallway walls 2 times, 3 times, 5 times. And especially when it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and you hear the knocking and it wakes you up and then you lay there. I actually thought somebody broke into our house on several occasions because I heard doors slamming, footsteps in the hallway, footsteps going down from our living area, our living room down into the finished basement, doors slamming. I've had lights come on by themselves when I didn't touch them or nobody else touched them. I can't tell you how many times the televisions, we have 5 televisions in our house, how many times they've come on by themselves with no remote anywhere near the TV or if it's in a drawer or something like that. The most recent happened this past weekend where my wife woke me up and she asked me if I was crying. And I said, no, I slept through the night. It wasn't me. And she was woken up by my alarm that went off at 3 and heard someone in the room crying. It sounded like a female sniffling and crying.
Wow.
Yeah. And just on and on and on, the weird things that go on in this house. And it's not just something that happens periodically. It happens almost every day. And we've had investigators over. They've experienced things. I asked, it's funny, I asked, sitting in the finished basement with several researchers, and I said, well, if you're not going to make any noise for them, how about making noise for me? You always seem to knock when I, you know, don't want you to knock, so how about knocking right now? And no sooner did I say that, there were 2 distinct knocks on the wall in the basement. Right around the corner from us. So yeah, there's weird stuff that happens here all the time. So I'm not surprised that BTE Radio can't go live. No, it is what it is.
And I said to you, leave it to you to be the one to move into a haunted house.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's just your luck.
Yeah. It's yeah. I just roll with it, man. I got to roll with it. But yeah, that's what's been going on with me. I haven't really been in much in the Bigfoot stuff lately. I've been kind of busy with the house, and you know how houses are, getting stuff done and fixed up and cleaned up, and holidays and all that stuff. So I haven't really done much as far as getting in the field. However, I did share an interesting photo that was shared with me. I shared it with you.
Mm-hmm.
A game camera photo that was taken in Girard Fort in Greene County, Pennsylvania. That's in the very far southwestern corner of the state. It's right next to the West Virginia state line. That was taken October 28th, according to the stamp on the game camera photo. And it shows some kind of anomalous animal or object in the bottom left-hand corner. Very dark in color, very low to the ground. It's not a very large animal, whatever it is, but it's so undiscernible because of camera flare and sunspots, and you can't really make out what it is. So you and I were talking about that the other night.
Yeah, it was interesting because you sent me a text with the picture in it that says, what do you think this is? And my exact response to you was, is that what I think it is?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. I think you're the only person that doesn't think it's a Bigfoot.
No, actually,
throwing that out there. I think you're the only one that doesn't think it's a Bigfoot. No matter how objective I tried to be, it looks, I said to you, that looks pretty.
Pretty convincing.
I hate to use the term, pretty convincing.
Yeah, it does when you first look at it, because it looks like it has the shape of a primate head. It looks like it has a cupped left arm that's kind of hanging down to the side. I've had a couple people look at it. I know Dave Dragazin has sent it out and shared it with other folks as well. It's been shared in our local circles, in our circle. A lot of people think it is a juvenile Sasquatch, but I kind of don't. I think it's a large cat, and I think it was caught off guard by the flash of the camera, and its head is actually turning, and it's looking over its right shoulder, looking back, and that hooked hand that everybody thinks is a hand is actually a tail.
It's a tail.
Yeah.
I can see that, too, now that, you know, we're talking about it, and when you have some time to actually sit on it and look, I can see exactly, you know, what you're saying about it, but it's interesting. But like I always say with photographic evidence, Eric, and I've been saying it for years, is that it's never going to be good enough.
Right.
So it could be a cat. It could be Bob Gimlin in a cat suit. It could be whatever. It's not going to be good enough to convince anybody that it is. But I'm telling you what, when I first saw it, I even said to you, holy crap, is that what I think it is? Looking at your analysis and, you know, spending a couple days looking at it now, I agree with you on probably more than likely some sort of bigger cat.
Yeah, I think it's a large cat. I don't know. There's nothing in the photo really for scale, for size reference, but I shared it with Brian Parsons. We'll get his feedback on it tonight as well because he's looked at it. Well, let's ask Brian what he thinks. He's going to be joining us here in a few minutes. But what's funny is I stepped away from the Bigfoot community, the Bigfoot world research, whatever you want to call it, just to kind of focus on family and friends and take care of my house. And there's too much drama going on in the Bigfoot world that's really kind of brought it down with all the Facebook, social media, everything that's going on. There's so much garbage put out there now that it's really hard to remain objective. And that's always what you and I've always tried to be as objective in this field. So I decided to take some time away and step back. And as soon as I did, I get lambasted with all these reports and I get phone calls. Hey, there's stuff going on in Greene County and Fayette County. And like the story that was shared with me last night, our good friend Dave Dragazin called me up and made several attempts to reach me by phone. He has an amazing story I'll share with you real quick. This took place in a little town called Frederickstown. It's not in Maryland. It's actually in Pennsylvania along the Monongahela mm-hmm. River. And according to what David told me, and he's trying to get more information on it, this happened earlier this month or late October, where there was a group of frackers, 20 to be exact, who were out in the field doing their work, and they witnessed a creature leaning down in a creek washing its face. And these 20 frackers watched this creature washing its face until the creature finally realized it was being watched. Then it picked up a boulder and threw the boulder at these guys that were watching it, and they all fled in terror and reported it to a woman who runs a lunchbox truck. She feeds them lunch, you know, sandwiches and stuff.
And what does she make?
I guess sandwiches and soups and hot dogs and stuff like that for them.
Does she have a specialty or anything?
I don't know, to be honest with you. But yeah, these 20 guys reportedly came up to the lunch truck and reported what they saw. And Dave is in the process of trying to get more information on that. And speaking of Dave, Dave had his own personal sighting at the very beginning of November near Masontown in Fayette
really?
County. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And Dave's a very objective researcher as well. And when I got the call from him, he was pretty excited and pretty he couldn't believe what he saw. But he was en route to pick up his grandson at a hunting class in Masontown, and he was coming from an area that has historically had a lot of sightings. Mm-hmm. And on the way there, he saw what he reported to be a large, upright, bipedal, black figure standing near a creek just on the side of the road. And he didn't get a good look at the face because it wasn't looking at him, but he drove by and watched this figure standing there down by the creek, and he's very insistent what he saw wasn't a person. So
well, that coming from him itself just kind of lends more credibility to it. He's been doing this a very long time.
He has, yeah.
And he's not somebody that usually – he's not an embellisher.
No, he's not.
So if that's what he said he saw, I have no doubt that that's what he's seen.
Yeah, when he told me about it, I would believe him, you know, if he – if he, you know, saw a unicorn, because he's just that kind of a person. He doesn't make stuff up. He doesn't, you know, embellish. He doesn't BS. When he sees something, you can take it to the bank that he's seen something.
Unicornhunters.com. We're the best.
we got your horn in our trunk.
Right there.
Oh, good Lord. But, yeah, it's been getting active. Dave was telling me all about these different sightings, and here's me not doing it anymore, you know, not getting in the field looking for these things. So
we had just talked a couple weeks ago, you and I said, man, it's been really quiet. It seems
it has. Yeah.
Lately with Bigfoot reports coming in. And then all of a sudden I open my mouth and I get a couple reports coming in. You know, you get these stories, these sighting reports coming. And I say stories. People get pissed at me when I say stories. I don't mean them stories as in like the fairy tales or whatever. I mean these accounts. So bear with me when I use that term loosely.
Right.
And these folks, after all these years, Eric, and the hundreds and almost thousands of reports probably investigated by you, me, Dave, and the others in this state, there's something to it. There has to be something to this. People are seeing things. I've experienced something that changed my outlook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost quit everything when I had my experience.
I've seen something weird I can't explain. I've had numerous experiences too.
So there's something to this. And folks, we rely on you to send us the data so we can get out and investigate it.
Yep.
And we need more. But I've said a couple of weeks ago, I'm tired of trying to prove this exists to the world.
Yeah.
I know what I seen. I know what I experienced for the most part. I'm still trying to prove it to myself. And I'd like to get better proof, I guess. And if I get that, great. If I don't, I'm just going to keep trying for it. We're never going to convince the world until there's something on a slab. I don't want to be the person to do that. But I'll sure like to take its picture.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a picture or a good video or something that conclusively proves that there's something out there. I know you and I have had our numerous encounters and experiences and talked to hundreds of witnesses. There's definitely something out there. I'm convinced of it. Something's going on. When I do my lectures, that's what I always say is, you know, I don't know if Bigfoot's real or not, but there's something that's causing this ongoing phenomenon for hundreds of years. Something's leaving tracks. People are seeing something. They're experiencing something. And my job anymore isn't to prove, like yours, isn't to prove to the world that this thing is real. My job is just to find out if it is or not for myself.
Exactly. But when you and I have talked to people like people from the DCNR and people from Fish and Game and people from law enforcement, experienced hunters, those people that are in these wooded situations every day that have that experience that changes their outlook, that means something to me.
Yep.
That's really important and that's really telling. And when we have other investigators that we trust that have starting to have their own experiences, he's been doing this for how long? 20 years?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's credibility.
Yeah, there's something going on, something to it. Unfortunately, it's muddied. The waters are muddied and it's mired with a lot of BS and drama and crap that you got to really shovel through to get to the good stuff. You got to take the good with the bad, I guess. But
you do. I mean, it's just like I say to you sometimes, some days there's a lot of crap to walk through, mm-hmm. but somebody's got to walk through the crap to get to where you got to go. And if you're like me, you just don't care what people think because, well, I'm half dumb to it anyhow. I you know me, when I get focused on a singular thing, I get focused and I don't tend to listen to everything else. And it's such a weird field. You're right. There's a lot of drama. You know, we look back to the whole Bob Gimlin thing that blew up a couple weeks ago. The man took a video of a Bigfoot 50 years ago, and it became a whole hoopla that he could even speak at his own event. So, like, that's the stuff that drives me away from it. The stuff that puts me back into it is the everyday encounters we get from those folks that experience something and they need to tell somebody about it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
They need us.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're still needed. But enough about us and our research and our grievances. Let's move on to tonight's show, shall we? We've got a great guest. Dr. Brian Parsons, a longtime friend of the show, longtime friend of ours. He has been on the show several times with us. Last time in October, we had him on until Skype died. But tonight we're doing a podcast, so hopefully Skype will allow us to bring Brian on. And we'll talk with him about his research, his latest book, which is called Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. He's got several others on the website we'll talk with him about. We'll talk about cases, some of his investigations, and things that he might have experienced along the way. So it's going to be fun to talk to Dr. Brian tonight and have him on the show. So let's step away for a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Dr. Brian Parsons on the program. You're listening to BTE Radio, and we are not live. We're podcasted tonight. So we're not live on the Para-X Radio Network, but
nope, not live.
We're podcasting tonight, and my guest co-host filling in for the ill Marie Samuels is the one and only Fork Chop himself, Sean Forker. BT Radio will continue after the break, so folks, make sure you keep it right where it's at. And welcome back to BTE Radio. We are not live tonight. We are podcasting because it's the curse of BTE Radio. If it can
it's
go wrong.
It's a death curse.
It's a death curse. What was the guy's name from Friday the 13th that said that? Ralph, I think?
Yeah, Ralph. I always called him as the dirty hermit.
He was dirty.
Ralph's much better. I think his name was Ralph.
I think it was Ralph, too. But it's a curse. You're all cursed at BT Radio. Anyways, welcome back to the show. We're doing a podcast tonight rather than live because we just couldn't get things to work. So we're here, and we've got Brian Parsons joining us tonight. We had him back on the show in October, and that went really well, as you remember, Brian. We did about a half an hour interview, then Skype died, and we decided to call it a night. So welcome back, Brian. We're glad to have you with us tonight. And with me at my side tonight is not Marie Samuels. She's under the weather. She's got a really bad ear infection and they fear that she might have a ruptured eardrum. So want to send our best get well wishes out to Marie. But joining us, filling in her shoes tonight, is BTE Radio co-founder, former co-host, and former color commentator, the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. Sean, we had a good discussion in the first half an hour. And we're gonna have a great discussion for the next 45 minutes to well 90 minutes I should say with Brian Parsons tonight. So welcome Brian, welcome Sean. Glad you guys are with us here on the show.
Thank you, Eric.
We were talking in the first half hour, Brian, about the photo that I sent you through Facebook message, the interesting game camera photo, and Sean believes from first look at it that it does look primate, as I did as well. I thought it was a primate, but further investigation, in my opinion, is that it's a large cat. So let's get your opinion, Brian. You've had a chance to look at the photo for a couple of days. What do you think that is in that game camera photo I sent you?
I tell you, I mean, without further information, it's really hard to, you know, focus in on one or even two particular things. But when I first saw it initially, I saw a cat. I mean, it looked like cat-like to me. But then the more I studied it, and there's a lot of questions came up, a lot of really weird things I started to see here that kind of almost made me think it wasn't a cat. But to be honest with you, the more I looked at it, the kind of walked away from it, came back, I'm almost thinking that it's possibly a hawk or other large bird that has swooped down into the scene here. But, you know, as you guys know, trail cams, there should be other photographs. If this was a cat, or even a, you know, a small primate, or a, you know, baby Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it, Squatch Junior. If it was something like that, there should be other photographs, unless this thing just walked, you know, beyond it. It depends on the, you know, the reset rate of this particular camera. That again, we don't know. I don't know how many, you know, triggers happen, but it almost looks to me as if a bird has swooped down and maybe he's, you know, got a little mouse or something, and then might have flown away. Know, just kind of the angle that we're looking at, you can't see any detail though, because the sun's directly in you know, coming right into the lens, and it's obviously you got a lot of reflections going on there. And the more you zoom in, it's a 2.4 megapixel camera that was being used, so it just kind of pixelates really, really bad as soon as you start to zoom in. And I couldn't see anything that would distinguish it from a bird or a cat even. I mean, so it's really difficult to see any sort of detail when you zoom in.
Well, that's a good perspective. I didn't think about a bird looking at it. But as Erica said, you know, looking at it over the weekend, I'm less convinced of it being some sort of primate, more as some sort of, you know, regular everyday animal. And the bird take is just really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, from what I'm seeing, you can kind of see what looks to be two wings folded back, mm-hmm. and almost like its head is down at that exact moment of the snap, which would make sense because it would trigger, if this bird is coming down and stopping, you wouldn't see any blur. You wouldn't really see, you wouldn't see it moving or anything like that. It would just be stationary, that snap capture. And it could have stayed there for a couple of seconds and then flown off and would have never had a secondary picture. You know, for me, I always think, you know, as the doctors say, when you hear hooves, you think horses, not zebras. I always start from the more logical things, and kind of, if you can eliminate that, then you move down toward the hopeful things like Bigfoot or something else like that. But you know, the cat thing, I really, as much as I initially had thought, it looks like a cat walking away from the camera. You know, you could kind of see what looks to be a head and then the tail curving off to the left. But the more I looked at it, the detail wasn't matching what the expectation should have been. And then I kind of thought, well, what other animals would be in a field like this? And it dawned on me about a bird. And then I kind of changed my perspective a little bit on it.
It's an interesting photo, whatever's in the picture. And as you mentioned, the camera flare, there's sunspots in the picture. The animal, whatever it is too dark in color to really see. And it's too far away from the camera, as far as I can tell, to really get a good look at what it is. So my first impression was it had a primate head, as Sean and I talked about. It looked like primate anatomy, very low to the ground. But the more I looked at it and I tried to lighten it and use the contrast and tried to enlarge it, which pixelated it really bad, and that didn't help. But I, the more I looked at it, and even you and I talked about it, Brian, I thought more looking like a cat with its head turned to its right over its shoulder looking back. But at this point, I guess it's anybody's guess as to what's in the picture. I've heard Bigfoot. I've heard juvenile Bigfoot. I've heard cat, as you mentioned, some kind of large bird. So who knows what's in the picture, but it's James Baker. Yeah. Your sidekick. It could be anything as far as we know at this point.
Yeah. It's frustrating without any kind of, secondary photo or, you know, showing us something else that was walking through the area that's identifiable that we could use it as a scale,
mm-hmm.
because it's impossible. There's nothing close enough to that area to really be able to get a solid determination. We don't even know exactly how high it is. Is it on a tree? Is it on a stick? I mean, is it on a rock? We don't know how high the camera is. So a lot of information is missing that can kind of help us narrow down what's actually in the picture.
Yeah. And
that's the sad thing about a lot of these trail cam pictures. You really can't tell what the heck is going on.
Yeah. A lot of them aren't high def. There are some high def cameras out there now that really take good, clear pictures, but a lot of them out there that people are putting out there aren't high def, so they don't take the detail that we're looking for. And especially when you have sun flare and you have camera flare, it's going to distort the picture. I talked to Dave Dragas, and we both know Dave, I consider Dave a very objective researcher. Dave feels that it's a juvenile Sasquatch, and many others do as well. And I'm not going to argue with them about their opinion on it. But I just don't see a Sasquatch in the picture. I see a cat.
With the information you have, nobody's right, nobody's wrong.
Exactly.
There's nothing you can pull out of that can validate or prove or put it into perspective. Unless you, like I said, there's a follow-up photograph that comes out, or we see the same activity from the same creature in the following weeks. None of us are right, none of us are wrong. So it's anybody's guess at this point.
Right. And an interesting side note to the picture, people are probably listening going, well, how can I see this picture? I'm sure you'll see it soon enough. I'm sure it'll be posted on social media soon enough once the owner gives permission to release it. But Dave did some follow-up as to where the picture was supposedly taken from. He drove down to that area of Greene County, which is in the far southwestern corner of Pennsylvania. And he met with some folks down there and got an idea of the area, which is very remote. And upon doing some driving around and talking to some people in the area, he found out that there have been other sightings in that Fayette County, Greene County area over the last couple of weeks. That's why he's leaning more towards it being a Sasquatch, because apparently, as I was telling Sean before you came on, 20 frackers in the Fayette County area apparently had a sighting of a creature a few weeks back, where they saw a creature washing its face in a stream. And there are supposedly 20 eyewitnesses to this sighting. And they said the creature became aggravated when it realized it was being watched and started throwing rocks and threw a boulder at these frackers, chased them off. And even Dave himself has claimed he's had a sighting in Fayette County near the Mason Town area at the beginning of the month, late October. So apparently there's some stuff going on down there and people are seeing something. And I guess that kind of could lend some credence to people's thoughts of why it's a Bigfoot in the picture.
Well, I think what we need to do is go to that lunch truck and find out what her specialty is and then have lunch and then go investigate.
Okay.
I'm really caught up on this food truck.
Yeah. Brian, the 20 frackers went to a food truck at the construction site and told this woman who runs this food truck what they saw. And she's the one that reported it to a law enforcement officer. That's how it got back to Dave Dragazin. So Sean is caught up on the idea of going to the food truck to find out what their lunch specials are rather than investigating Bigfoot.
Yeah, might not be a bad place to start. You know, you got to start somewhere.
That's right. Have some lunch and then go look.
That's right. But I'm not going to die in an empty stomach.
That's a good idea. Better to hit the trails with a full stomach than die a hungry and thirsty man.
There you go.
So Brian, let's get back to what you've been up to. You've been kind of busy with the show and everything going on, and some speaking engagements and over the Halloween season. Have you had a chance to get out and do any investigating lately?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, all this stuff is just it's very time consuming, as you know. A radio show, a weekly radio show that I do, the Paranormal News Insider. It's a lot of work. And then on top of that, I work in retail, and that's even more work. So I really haven't been able to get out. A lot of plans that I want to go out and go back into a little bit of ghost research a little bit, and keep my hands in the cryptid field as well. And no UFO stuff. You can't really plan any of that kind of stuff. It just happens. So right now I'm just kind of living out the rest of the year and just kind of wrapping up a lot of projects that I'm working on, including with the radio show, the top 10 paranormal news stories, which I do usually at the end of November and going through the entire month of December. I do about two stories a week for the top 10. I'm actually starting that this Tuesday, November 28th. Well, that'll be you guys, by the time you hear about it next week, it'll be in the second week. But I will be starting that on the November 28th, my countdown, which is essentially going through the entire year, every show, all the notes, probably 200-300 pages worth, and going through all this information and disseminating it, kind of arguing with myself and putting it into a specific order, and then changing it up again in the next 5 minutes, figuring that I'm wrong. And then finally settling all this. It took weeks to really get to where I finally feel comfortable with the order of the top 10, although I know a lot of people will not be happy. You can't make everybody happy. We all have our own perspective. But it's just about recording and documenting the stories that have happened throughout the year. And on top of all this, I'm trying to write a couple of books, some fiction and nonfiction, and then also putting together a conference for February. And Eric, I'm not sure if you know this, but putting together a paranormal conference, it's a lot of work.
No,
it's
really?
It's a ton of work.
Yeah, I think I can relate.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding.
You're so busy with everything going on. I mean, the show, you've got six books out. You lecture a lot. You've been popping up on some pretty big name events, especially this past year. You've gone out in the field with me a few times this past year. And you keep yourself quite busy, so I can understand why you haven't had much time to investigate. I think the last time, if I'm not mistaken, you were actually out in the field was back in early spring, or late spring, I should say, heading into the summer months. You were out in the field with us, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I love getting out there, and especially in the woods, looking for anything and dealing with the weather and the cold, and being out there with level-headed guys too, just look, well, not just guys, gals too, looking for these things and just kind of working together, especially people I might not have worked with. I mean, you like to go out with people that you know and trust, but sometimes it's interesting to go out with people that you've never been out with before. And you kind of get some unique perspectives, and you get people with differing backgrounds, and you're able to kind of learned something out there too, which is kind of neat. But yeah, it's unfortunately I don't get to go out as much. Even like I love going and kayaking, and I did a lot of kayaking last year. Going out to places like Salt Fork, I could go kayak during the day and then get up in the middle of the night and go out and look around as well. So it's kind of missed out on that. I spent a lot of time wrapping up my latest book earlier this year, which soaked up pretty much most of my spring and early summer because I kind of had a deadline for the Kecksburg UFO Festival. And my latest book was on UFOs. So I wanted to have it out in time to have it on the table there at Kecksburg because I thought that was kind of important.
Well, your latest book is a handbook for amateur UFO investigators. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I had always wanted to write one on that subject, but I thought that, you know, MUFON has their field researcher's manual, which is excellent. I mean, it covers every topic you can think of, but the more I thought about it, it's over $100 and not everybody has $100 to flip for a book, you know? So, and not to mention the more I kind of looked at it, it's just a series of blogs, essentially. It's just a bunch of people just put together information. And it's very dry to read. And I thought, well, you know, I've already done 4 books on ghosts, this cryptid book, which I really enjoyed writing and researching for. And I thought, why not? Just finish this thing off so I can move on and get more into some specific things and get rid of the amateur stuff, which I wanted to write anyway, because, you know, you see all these ghost groups pop up and then they fade away. You know, they hang up their acronym and they're gone. You don't hear anything from them. But where's all that work? Where's all that knowledge? Where's all that research? Where's all those, you know, field notes? What did they learn? You know, did they learn anything at all? Or did they just screw around for 5 years or whatever? So I wanted to leave something behind. If it's a book or if it's any kind of knowledge or information, I don't have any inkling to ever want to be on TV and do one of these shows. Because I don't know, just not my thing. I have a face for radio, so or face for, you know, to be an author. So I figured I want to focus on writing books. And this first batch of books, it's taken me forever. But just to write basic stuff, because it's hard as a researcher that's been doing this for 20 years. I'll be at a library and I'll for ghost topic and I'll throw out the word cryptozoology. And I automatically assume that everybody knows what I'm talking about. And I see a lot of blank looks and people looking around at each other. And then I realize they have no clue what I just said. So it's sometimes it's hard for those of us that have been doing this for a long time to be able to step back and realize what the general public knows and what they don't know. So I figured I should write something on UFOs. And it's a very difficult book because there's – I mean, a lot of people believe in Bigfoot, but they're also able to separate their belief from evidence or data, like we just talked about with this photograph. People may feel it's a Bigfoot, but they're still open to other opportunities. When you're talking about UFOs and potential alien life, it's pretty much all or nothing. You either believe in – if you think something is a UFO, you're pretty much believing that it's probably an alien-powered craft or piloted craft, but – you know, it's people are just so caught up in belief in the UFO field, and there's conspiracy theories tied into all that, and ancient alien theories. So there's a lot going into that that I felt like I had to cover, which I did, and still waiting for some backlash on that. But you know, I did what I thought was honest to kind of balance out the topic, which is the goal with all of my books, is to provide the reader with a balance. Here's the information. Here's the background. Here's my research. You can believe whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you to be a believer, and I'm not going to tell you that all this stuff is a bunch of hogwash and it's not true. Some stuff is hogwash, but you know, I don't want to try. My goal isn't to convince the reader. It's to educate them and bring them to a certain level and then turn them loose and allow them to look at other resources. Because my books are just right now, these are just stepping stones. I'm not claiming that you're going to walk away and have the ultimate knowledge or this is the ultimate guide to UFO research. It's a stepping stone. And I try to cover a lot of basic topics, such as the stuff we're talking about earlier with this photograph, how to disseminate information from photographs and stories and to kind of see if there's a little bit of reality from it, or you're just going along for a hoax. So it kind of runs that gamut from looking at different aspects of UFO research and investigation, whether you're in the field looking at rings in the ground, or you're investigating a crop circle, or you're sitting at home looking at your computer trying to figure out what you're looking at.
No, I completely agree with your standpoint on the balance. It's important. I think there's a lot of material out there written, you know, with a certain slant. And when you're able to provide the reader with an opportunity to kind of develop their own, I think that's a great opportunity for them to learn and grow in the field.
But and I'll tell you, my goal with the cryptid book, the cryptozoology book that I wrote, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, I had an opportunity to get that reviewed by a skeptic, and it actually appeared in the Skeptical Inquirer, and I was quite honored, because it's easy for me to take this out to the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure and have people get all excited and want to buy it, and you know, those are people that are obviously in love with the topic, but to have a skeptic look at this and say, "Well, this is pretty good, it's pretty balanced, you have a lot of good information, a lot of great research," that means a lot, because that shows me that I'm properly balanced with this topic. And I've tried to do the same thing here with UFOs, which, again, there's a lot of belief and culture-based stuff that's a lot more heavy in the UFO field versus, you know, cryptozoology. I mean, you just look at the amount of movies that are out there dealing with aliens and UFOs. It's overwhelming compared to even ghosts plus cryptids. I think it's like 5-1, really. But I kind of – obviously, I've done all this stuff. I've researched and investigated. But I think the one thing that really – I finally realized is that UFO research is much – actually much easier and much more – I don't know how to put it. But it actually provides you – you have the opportunity to get more information than you can with a cryptid investigation, or certainly – a ghost investigation. And what I mean by that is, when you're going to somebody's backyard where they said they saw a maybe they saw a mountain lion, or maybe they saw Bigfoot, you only have so much time before tracks are gone, scat's gone, any kind of sign that the animal was there is gone, and you have no other way of retrieving it. You may have a trail cam that takes a photograph, and then we might end up what we were talking about tonight, something that's extremely difficult. You could give it to 10 people and you're going to get 10 different results. You might not get anything conclusive. But with UFO research, it's possible to completely recreate the scene, no matter how much time has gone by. You have the opportunity to look at historical weather, so you can put together what the temperature was. Was there snow on the ground? Was it raining? And this is all compared to what the witness is saying. You can look at radar data. You can look at flight track information. Was there an airplane in this area where this person said they saw this light? Was there any kind of, obviously small aircraft to a large aircraft? We can look at satellite position data. We can look at star charts. We can even contact the American Meteor Society and find out if there was a meteor sighting in that particular area. So you can almost recreate that scene by layer, and are able to look at that particular report and look at that. Because obviously, you know, with a UFO, you're not actually researching or investigating the UFO itself. You're looking at the scene. You're looking at the report. You're studying that report. Because there's no way to go out there, and unless you get a supersonic jet and chase after this thing and try to shoot it down, you're not really investigating it. You're investigating the scene.
I think that's a great analysis of looking at a UFO case, because I've always been the one, and Sean can attest to this, I've always said I don't get involved in UFO research because there's really no point in going out and trying to research what they saw. If they claim they saw a UFO, chances are when you go to that site, there's not going to be a UFO that's still hovering in the sky for you to see. But you bring up a lot of great points, you know, that you can actually recreate the scene by weather, by what's in the solar system at that time, that scene, stars, planets.
Like a forensic breakdown. Almost.
Right. Exactly. Pretty, so yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That actually helps. And it kind of actually answers the question I was going to ask is, of the three fields that you've investigated, ghosts and spiritualism, cryptozoology and ufology, what is the most frustrating to you to research?
Well, I think the most frustrating would be ghosts. And that's because ghosts is, I mean, all three of these are dealing with people's belief systems, their perspective. But with ghosts, you really don't have anything tangible to deal with. You're just dealing with events that happen. People hear things, they see things, and they interpret it one way. And unfortunately, the culture of investigation has affected that a lot, to the point of I don't even really do ghost investigations. Client-based investigations anymore, because the client has a certain expectation based on what they've seen on television. They expect me to investigate a specific way, which doesn't work, by the way. These silly gadgets and all these toys that light up and make noises, and radio sweepers and these obelisks and all this tech that people are so in love with, it really honestly doesn't do anything. It just goes in with your belief system. It's cool if you want to take that to an abandoned location or a cemetery or old hotel or an old prison, but it doesn't belong in somebody's house. Those things don't really – they do nothing but cloud the judgment of the person using it, and it just fits in with the whole spiritualism type of attitude, like with Ouija boards. It's just really and truly – I've said it before that a K2 is essentially just an electronic Ouija board. It does the same thing. And a Ouija board to me isn't a all-powerful portal-opening device. It's a piece of plastic and cardboard. I'm not afraid of them. I've never had anything bad happen. You can believe stories. People always know somebody that knows something that went wrong. But really and truly, there's never been any kind of police reports or anything that says, well, this person died because they used a Ouija board. You know, it doesn't exist. But ghosts, it's just so frustrating because you can't really prove anything. You can't really validate anything. You can't draw it out. You can't find traces of it. You can't put it in a box. You know, you can't shoot it. You can't run it over with your car. You can't get it on radar. I mean, it's just dealing with people is essentially what it comes down to. And as far as cases dealing with, you know, residential cases, it's just really problem solving with this person and talking with them and figuring out what they think it is. And 9 times out of 10, you're just solving some sort of personal perspective thing going on with the client in their home. And usually once they acknowledge that something is really truly going on that they can't understand, it all goes away anyway. And that's really even more frustrating. And to top it all off, when you really deal with you dig into parapsychology and psychical research and you understand what ghost investigators have been doing for well over a century now, that the more scrutiny, the more science you put into looking and viewing and trying to capture evidence of a ghost, the more elusive they become, which is completely frustrating. And a lot of people will say, well, that's because they're not true, which could be possible in a lot of accounts, but it just seems to be that way, that there's some sort of intelligence behind it. And the more you try to actually focus on tricking something into giving itself up, the less likely it is to show up. And the second that you're screwing around or having a conversation or shutting all your equipment down and packing everything up, that's when something happens, when you least expect it. And it's just so frustrating.
I'd agree with you on that. I think what you said makes a lot of sense. You basically become a shrink when it comes to ghost hunting. You've got to really dig down and find out what the psyche is of a lot of the clientele and what they're dealing with personal-wise, with emotional-wise, mentally, physically. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. And it may not be paranormal related at all. It might be something psychoschematic. There could be something going on in their house. There could be CO levels that are high or something that's causing them to hallucinate or hear things. You know, there's a lot more, I think, involved with ghost hunting than there is in cryptozoology or even ufology for that matter.
Oh, absolutely. And it's become a kind of a liability too, is another major reason I don't do it anymore, because like you said, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with potential psychotic episodes, or they may have some sort of mental disorder or something else that's causing them to see these things. And unless you're even if you're a trained professional or you're a licensed counselor in your specific state, you have to be very careful what you say and do. And people that come in here and say, well, you got a demon in your basement, you're putting these people in harm, because now you've just fed into their fears, and you could cause them a lot of mental trauma that could, you know, they could come after you legally. And, you know, we're in a day and age right now that seems like everybody's sensitive about everything. So, I mean, what a better time to kind of tiptoe away from that kind of scenario that could happen. I mean, it's hard because I want to help people. But like I said, there's a certain expectation that things have to go a certain way. And, you know, like you said, I've dealt with people that were alcoholics or drug abusers, and the family didn't really know it, but I kind of put it together and I realized it. And it's time to, like, just basically say, you need help that I can't give you. Here's some phone numbers. I can't help you beyond this. You know, I can't comment anymore on it. And you have to kind of walk away and wash your hands. And, you know, some of the stuff I see out there people do, it's just a matter of time until, somebody goes through a major lawsuit where it's going to ruin it for everybody. And, you know, I've always kind of been one of those people, and I kind of hope that there's some sort of licensing. But with licensing, there would have to be, an education that's universal, and that's never going to happen either. So, people are going to be discouraged from doing this because of the legal issues, and it's just turning into a mess, and it's a circus right now with these, like I said, all these tools and light up toys that everyone's, you know, carrying around and believing every little bleep and blip and noise as a ghost reacting to their statements. It's horrifying.
Destination America.
Oh gosh, yeah.
The TV shows.
It makes great entertainment. Like I said, it's fun. If you want to go to Waverly Hills and do that, great, go ahead. But don't do it in some guy's house that the whole family is terrified. They need answers. They need help. They need direction. And you've got your little Radio Shack thing that's going back and forth, and you're hearing radio stations. Oh my gosh, you said pack up and move out. You know, this is influencing living people, and you got to be careful how you approach that.
That's scary in itself. I just bought this house. They're telling me to move. Tell you to move out. Oh, that could be ugly.
We've kind of been on that crusade for years, Eric, where we've talked about, you know, very similar methodology behind it. And that's one of the things that's always bothered me personally are the experts that go out, and I think they always have a tendency to make things worse. And with television the way it is today, so quick to make everything out to be demonic, or because they think it's going to get them on TV, but the amount of damage they can cause to a particular family or individuals is just unreal.
You know, and the one thing that I've noticed from going to these events and seeing people, you know, in action, other groups and other individuals do this stuff, is when I first started doing this 20 years ago, we would be in the house for 6-8 hours and never really have anything happen. We would go on a, you could say, quote unquote, ghost hunt and be in a location for, you know, all night long and never really have anything happen. And these guys go into a location and they'll set up their equipment, turn on their cell phone app or whatever, and they have the expectation that something is going to happen within a minute or 2 minutes, and there's no patience. They move on, like, this isn't working, let's go somewhere else. Or they'll flip on another gadget and say, let's try this instead. It's almost like they desire immediate results, again, because of, I think, the influence of television. Now, I think the influence of the internet really brought all these people to this. But now TV, it's just completely ruined everything. And people have this expectation that there is going to definitely be something happening at every location. And it's got to happen very quickly before we go to commercial.
Well, 98% of the time, nothing happens. And I try to tell as many people as I can that romanticize paranormal, cryptozoological, UFO investigating, that it's really boring.
Yep.
If you're planning on just doing the field work, if you're not planning on reading or studying up or doing the legwork that kind of prepares you for being out there, you're missing out on a good portion of the journey that is this type of research. But if you're doing it just for the field work, most people end up being disappointed. It's not as exciting as it looks.
Yeah, and that's why I think a number of groups move on so quickly, or they become skeptical, and then they turn around and attack the field because they realize they're drawn in by this excitement and, oh, wow, these gadgets, they do all this work and we can find ghosts. We can talk to ghosts. It's interactive. It's great. We're going to have I'm going to spend $1,500 to be in this location for 4 hours, but we're going to get poked. We're going to get prodded. We're going to get pushed downstairs. We're going to see orbs floating down the stairway. It's going to be so much fun. And then you're right. They get there. Nothing all night long. They feel cheated. They feel jaded, but that's the reality. I mean,
well, and clients, I think you, when you were talking a little earlier there, Brian, about, you know, writing your book and, you know, trying to get a good balance for skeptics, I think skepticism and skeptics themselves have been given a bad name by a select few skeptics that really are more hard-nosed than they are really truly skeptics. I think a skeptical person is somebody that can still let the evidence speak for itself, right? And I think that's the true measure of a skeptic. But I think we need them more and more in this field. And I think providing a balance really levels that field out for everybody so that the everyday person, the experienced investigator, and somebody who's got a very curious, benign skepticism that really isn't out there to make people look bad, that's really out there to look at the situation – I think that's where the balance is at, and we need more skeptics. And I think if you can influence more skeptics to look at this objectively and seriously, I think that's where the win's at.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when I first started out, you know, I was told that before I actually got in the field, I was taught that, well, parapsychology is a junk science, pseudoscience that has nothing to do with anything. And then I started to read about psychical research in the late 1800s, and I started recognizing all these scientists' names that I was supposed to respect. Well, wait a minute. If they're doing that, then maybe there's something more to this. But, you know, I heard people like the amazing James Randi and Joe Nickel, and saw kind of the attitude that was out there. And I'm like, well, these guys obviously hate what we do. They don't believe in it whatsoever. And I did. I was one of the guilty. I looked at them as the enemy. We're on different sides of a war here. And it took me a little bit of time to kind of realize that, hey, you know what? There's some information here that's genuinely solid that I've come to the conclusion. It probably took me a little longer because I discounted that information. But now I agree with them. I agree with a lot of what they're saying. And then, you know, I started following a lot of these guys and reading their books. Benjamin Radford's Scientific Paranormal Investigation, fantastic book. And he had some articles that I started talking to him about certain things, and he and I started talking about different aspects of ghost research, encrypted research, and, you know, he's actually helped me write some of my books because of I need his input on some of the stuff. So I've reached across the aisle, and I realized that some of these guys actually want the same thing we want. They're just looking at it from a different perspective. They're looking at it through, well, let's make sure we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's and doing our work. Whereas, you know, on our side, the believer side, we're just jumping in and hoping that, you know, whatever, all this stuff that we're doing, we can pick something out of here that makes sense. But, you know, I am more inclined to look at it things skeptically than I would be as from a believer point of view, which is probably opposite of where I came from. But it, to me, it makes much more sense to be even keeled and a little bit more skeptical. And, you know, I see paranormal groups that say, well, we have a team skeptic. Ooh, well, good for you. I think everybody on your team should be skeptical. Instead of one guy sitting in a corner you're not going to listen to anyway, who's going to argue with you. But, you know, if everybody sees or thinks that way, you know, a little common sense instead of just, oh my gosh, think something moved. It has to be a ghost. You know, I always tell the story about McDonald's. My group went to, we used to have our meetings in McDonald's. So we went to a pre-investigation meeting at McDonald's. And we're all standing there. And we're watching the people frantically run around preparing the food. And there was this thing of fries sitting on the fry station. And it slowly started to slide. And it dumped. And it flipped over and landed on the floor. And we're all laughing about it like, oh, I think that was yours. No, we're having a good time about it. And then I kind of filed that away because I was thinking about that, the same exact point that I'm about to make. And we went on the investigation. And nothing was really happening. All of a sudden, we heard a noise. And everyone's like, oh, this is it. It's a ghost. you know, where everyone's like in this, you know, that mode of every noise is a ghost, and we're hearing different things, and everyone's like hyper aware. And I kind of said, okay, everybody come here. Let's just slow down for a second. And I said, remember the French fries. We saw it fall. We don't know how it fell. It just seemed to fall. But nobody blamed it on a ghost because we didn't perceive McDonald's to be haunted. It's the same thing happening now. We shouldn't perceive this as haunted type activity. Let's just kind of slow down and look at it from a different perspective. And ever since then, those investigators that were there that night had a different outlook on all these things. And it kind of changed their way of looking at it. And I think that's something that we all need to do, whether it's, again, in ghosts or even in the cryptid field or in the UFO arena. I mean, it's all the same. We have to be more critical of the information.
That's something that's missing and lacking these days, unfortunately, with social media especially. When I first got in this, and I've been in this 20 years myself, and there
was no social media.
I know, mainly in the Bigfoot cryptozoology aspect of things. But I still was interested in hauntings and ghosts and UFOs and stuff like that. But when we started out back in 2007, or I should say 1997, things were a lot different than they were today. There wasn't all the gadgets and the tools and the technology and the TV shows, and there wasn't a lot of that. You had to go out and you had to beat the streets, and you had to go sit in someone's house or sit in the forest for hours upon end. And like Sean said, and you said, Brian, nothing happens. It's hours and hours of boredom and quiet and hearing common animals in the forest that you can identify. And all of a sudden now, in the last probably 5 to 10 years, with social media coming into play, everybody has a picture they want to share. Everybody has the belief that what's in that picture is paranormal or a Bigfoot or a Thunderbird or a UFO. And they put it out there, and people are so willing to believe what they're seeing rather than tearing that picture apart and trying to find out the truth of what's in that picture or that video. And it's gotten so overwhelming that I've actually had to step away from it myself just to get away, because it became so frustrating. Every time I go on Facebook, seeing a tree stacking or a dark, fuzzy picture in the background, and, oh my gosh, look at this Bigfoot I found. And it's not a Bigfoot, when you can sit and look at it and say, no, it's an anomaly caused by a shadow of a tree with the sun hitting in a different direction. And people just have lost that focus on finding the truth. It's a breath of fresh air to hear guys like you, Brian, and Sean, that are still looking for objective answers rather than jumping to conclusions.
I mean, I get it when people want to believe. I want to believe too, but you just can't allow yourself to, you know, be fooled by the information and evidence. And it's, you know, when you're talking about tree stacking and stuff, we had I was going to go kayaking. I think it was last year, but we had a super, super windy day. So actually was just kind of just went on a local hike, which was still pretty dangerous because there was large tree branches falling. And it kind of hit me, and I was, well, it didn't hit me physically, but it hit me mentally about watching these large branches fall in the woods. And I just kind of sat there and observed how they were falling. And I'm thinking, you know, the way that kind of stacks up there, people would really jump to that conclusion that that is, you know, some sort of stick structure or whatever else they call it nowadays. But you'd be amazed at what nature can do on its own, you know, with wind and trees moving. Things can stack up pretty easily on themselves, you know, in the woods. And it's just amazing how, and like you said, time has gone by. We started out with analog equipment, and now everything's digital. And there was the big debate back then about all these things. And, you know, like we've talked about, things where you had patience, you had to sit around and nothing happened. And now the expectation is, boom, it's got to happen right now, because, you know, they're used to watching these hour-long TV shows or half-hour-long TV shows. And so much happens in that short amount of period of time that I think it's become almost a thought process that, well, you know, all this stuff happens to Zach Bagans in a half hour, an hour. So it's going to happen to us too, right?
Happens every, you know, week, Eric, to Zach.
Eric, that reminds me of the time, and it was at the last East Coast Bigfoot Conference, right? They brought those folks from Virginia, brought that gigantic tree twist. Do you remember? They cut this tree, and they brought it. And everybody's looking at this, and there's you, me, and Craig Woolheater from Texas standing there. And you know, we're kind of like, this looks like it was natural. This looks like it was a, you know, happened from like a microburst. It was definitely wind that did this. And I kind of said something to one of the researchers that brought it, and you'd have thought I'd punch their mother with that comment. Like, to me, and I think to others there, it was clear as day that this was done by nature, right? And it just kind of gets to that point where there are some folks that get so blind in their belief that this is what it is that they eliminate the rational, logical truth behind, you know, what really occurs with this stuff. And I guess to me that no matter how good the technology's got, and let's be honest, the technology's getting pretty good, guys. The evidence isn't getting any better. But the thought process behind what these people think they're presenting, that's what's different. They're almost jihadist in their beliefs to what they feel their stuff is.
And the troubling thing, too, is this has kind of been going on for a long time where groups are saying, hey, let's share information. Let's share our data. Let's share our, quote, evidence, unquote, which is – it's not really evidence, it's really data, but, you know, let's share this stuff and you know, why don't we talk about all this? Because, you know, let's hold hands and sing Kumbaya and have what is that, paranormal unity. Yeah, okay. But then you see somebody will post something and somebody will come along and say, well, have you thought about this or have you tried to recreate it? Oh my gosh. You know, like you said, it's like you just punch them in the gut. And these groups will react negatively and say that you're attacking me or you're shaming me or whatever. And they make up something and then try to, you know, delete the post or block these people or badmouth them. And it's unfortunate that people just can't take constructive criticism or looking at your evidence and saying, well, maybe they're right. Well, maybe let's try this. You know, I've seen. There was a case where a guy claimed that this ghost was in the bathroom with this in this particular case. And this movement of this object looked exactly like the digital recorder he was using that I'd seen in an earlier scene of his video. So I took that screen cap and cut it and put it next to the other screen cap. And I said, I think this is what maybe you're seeing. Oh my gosh, this guy went on a tirade threatening to sue me for arguing his evidence that he's going to write a book and he's going to be on a TV show and I'm just trying to undermine him and I'm jealous and all these other things. I'm like, dude, I'm just showing you what I'm seeing here. You know, I don't know what the big deal is, but it seems like a lot of people just overreact about this and they want everyone to believe what they believe without that critical thought. And it's really scary the direction that all of these fields are going in with that kind of stuff. It's like, nobody wants to admit that maybe that's not a ghost or maybe that's really not a Bigfoot sitting there. You know, they've, like you said, they've already made up their mind and they don't care what anybody else has to say about it. And that's never going to allow us to be not just accepted, but even slightly respected by any scientific field at all, you know, whether it's cryptozoology or ghost research or anything. And when these advancements start coming in biology or medicine or, you know, brain science or wherever the stuff is going to come from, they're not even going to bother with us anymore because they see how we believe and we react instead of being at least a little bit scientific for the most part, the majority of the field. And, you know, it's a shame because scientists are going to prove all these things and we're all going to be sitting here playing with our toys.
Yeah, I just wish we could get people to understand, like, at least from my perspective here, I don't wake up every day saying, man, I really hope I can debunk somebody's Bigfoot evidence today. You know, it's never been my point. You know, listening to folks out there, I really want your stuff to be the real deal. It's going to make our jobs a lot easier moving forward.
Right.
I really want it to be the real deal, but unfortunately, it can't be that way. And, you know, we have to set a higher standard for ourselves if we're going to start, you know, as we talked earlier before, you know, we brought you on. Brian, for me, it's not about trying to prove to the world this exists. It's just about collecting the evidence so that we have it or collecting the data. Because you're right. There's not a lot of evidence. There's a lot of data. There's not a lot of evidence. And like I would like, you know, John Smith's research and evidence and data to, you know, really line up with the stuff I've collected over time. But sometimes it just doesn't happen. And that's the reality of any kind of scientific inquiry. Sometimes the stuff just doesn't add up.
Right. And instead of, you know, going back to the drawing board or saying, well, you know, we're not getting something solid. You know, maybe this stuff doesn't work. Let's be more specific, or let's try to conduct experiments. They just, you know, rush out and buy the next tool that comes out, you know, the digital dowsing tool or whatever kind of gadget pops up, or Ovilus, or, you know, it's continuing, but it's all really the same thing. It's all subjective, and it's just feeding on the belief systems instead of people setting up an experiment or going back to the drawing board and trying to figure out what they're doing right or doing wrong, or trying new techniques, or saying, you know, I keep getting stumped by this. Maybe I'll try that. You don't really see a lot of movement in a direction with most people. It's just, you know, we just go on tour. We go talk. We read a couple of books. We're famous, and that's it. You know, we're done. And
And even the collecting of the data, you know, we're humans. We make mistakes. That's one of the things I love about, you know, real scientifically collected data from instrumentation. Something simple as a moon phase, right? I've had a situation happen with some of my own team members in the past where we write down a journal entry in our own journals to compare the information later, and, you know, somebody didn't get the moon phase right. And it was in dispute with some of the other researchers. So, hey, there's this great thing called meteorological data, and we can go and actually see what the moon phase was that night. And, you know, you can answer a lot of questions. And by looking at different types of data points and looking at things and being able to critique yourself as well, there's so much we can learn from each other if we're willing to set aside our you know, I guess maybe it's ego, maybe it's not ego, but if we're willing to set that stuff aside and really look objectively, I think we could get a lot farther along than we are. But we have to start looking at things a lot more scientifically and a lot less personally.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is ego, and it's ego based on our individual beliefs. And, you know, people, again, they do the work and they don't want to admit that they're wrong. You know, they want everyone to agree with them, and when somebody doesn't, they get offended by that. And we have to, like you said, set aside our personal feelings. If you're really in this to prove something, you can't have that, because that's, you know, that's the foundation of science, is let the data speak, not your beliefs, not to suit the data to suit your feelings on it. The data has to speak for itself. It has to stand on both legs. It's got to be provable. It has to be verified by somebody else. You know, you have to set it up so somebody else can come in and do the same work. And we're just not seeing that. And the thing that bothers me about stuff like paranormal unity, we don't all have to get along. You know, scientists don't get along. There are scientists that sue each other all the time for stuff, for slander and all kinds of stuff. And they don't agree. They don't get along. They argue all the time. But the way they do it is a lot more, I don't want to say professional, but they're doing stuff that we're not doing, and they're forming camps of thought, which is healthy. We need to compete against each other, but we need to do it in a more, let's say, mature manner, that we have to do our work in a more mature manner. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having competing thoughts, as long as we're doing the work to validate that, or allow the work to validate itself. But if we're just going to sit here and argue and, you know, slander each other on Facebook all day and tweet angry things to each other and make YouTube videos where we bash each other, what's the good? Where are we moving? Where are we going to? You know, it's just so unhealthy for a field that's struggling to be accepted. You know, we want to be a form of science here, but we're acting like children on a playground.
I think some people strive on that.
You know, some of my best friends are people that have alternative theories and beliefs of what they feel some of these be. I'm a flesh and blood researcher. That's what I'm comfortable with, because that's what things are look like to me when I look at the evidence, right? Some of my best friends are people that completely disagree with my assessment, and we argue about it. But at the end of the day, we still listen to each other. And there are some times they've made some pretty convincing arguments, and at the end of the day, I make some pretty convincing arguments too, but it's all to further our own individual, information sets and satisfy our own curiosities. There's things we don't have answers for. We can't prove these things exist yet to the world. And I think when we start shutting out certain conversations, when we stop looking at certain data, or we try to skew certain data to fit our own agendas, you know, that's an opportunity too. I love having these kind of conversations with, I can't help it. Because I really feel like we have to start treating this more like a science. And I'm not a professional scientist. Don't get me wrong. I have a regular day job. I work in the retail sector. That doesn't make me any less qualified to have an opinion. I like to conduct this with a little bit more scientific scrutiny. I think that's how the world works. And I think that's how people, serious-minded individuals, start taking these field of research is a lot more seriously.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to be a scientist per se or have an education as a scientist to actually be a scientist. I mean, being a scientist is utilizing a methodology, mm-hmm. a step-by-step methodology. And if you understand how that works and you understand the boundaries of where you can go with those steps, you know, I've seen people put on their websites, we're a scientifically based paranormal group. We formulate a hypothesis, and they put like right next to it the steps, and they put, we believe in ghosts. Mm-hmm. We go looking for ghosts. We get an EVP that proves ghosts exist. Like, no, that's not how it works at all. And, you know, we oversimplify it.
Before.
Right. Yeah. They oversimplify it, or they suit the information for their belief systems. And that's just totally not how it works. But if you understand it, there's no reason why we all can't utilize that process. It's not that complicated. It's just, you know, we think science is so difficult. It's not difficult. It's just, we have to, again, like we've been saying over and over again, get the data, disseminate the data. Where does the data point? Where can we, find false positives? Where can we find logical explanations? How do we figure out what exactly is going on here? How do we interpret it? You know, but outside of our belief systems, you know, because it's easy to believe in all this stuff, but I think it's a lot harder to be critical of it. And I think that's where a lot of people fail, because it's so exciting. It's so fun to get out there and do all these things and see these photographs and be out in the dark in these buildings and investigating. But to be able to step back and say, well, you know what, maybe that's a interference from a radio, or maybe that's this, or maybe it's that, it's depressing, I guess, for some people, and they get mad. And like we've said, they just say, you know what, this isn't as fun as I thought it was. I'm going to go do something else.
No, yeah, well, that's kind of like where it's led me is not so much as it's not fun to investigate. I love to investigate. I love to go out there and try to prove what I'm hearing or what I'm experiencing in the woods. It's more about finding out what's making that noise, or what's leaving those weird tracks, or what people are seeing. That's what intrigues me. What makes it less fun for me is what we've been talking about tonight on the show, is the belief systems have become so strong and people have become so passionate about what they believe in that they fail to look objectively at some of these different fields and some of the research that they're conducting. It's like you said, their point of view is towards an agenda that they want. It's what they believe in, and it's got to be what they believe in. And the minute you say, well, why can't it be a storm cloud rather than a UFO? They become so defensive and angry, and they start slamming you and they attack you. And just because you don't agree with them and you're offering constructive criticism rather than saying, oh, I think you're full of crap, they become angry and bitter, and it ends friendships, and it becomes real nasty. And that's why I've stepped away from it, is because there's too many people in the field that have gone from being objective and trying to find the truth to, it doesn't fit what they believe, so they're going to attack you and attack whoever doesn't agree with what they believe in. And that's where the frustration lies, I think, for a lot of people that are in this objectively. But regardless, it's always going to be there. And as you mentioned, until people start doing this, you know, and looking at it rationally rather than following a belief system or putting everything they think is a ghost or Bigfoot or UFO on Facebook or social media, it's never going to change.
Yeah, and it's weird too, because when I started out in the ghost field, we used to have ghost hunters and you had paranormal investigators, and there was a very big wide swath between the two. You had ghost hunters, people that went to cemeteries, abandoned buildings, and they did it for fun. They did it for their own subjective experience and for entertainment. And then you had the paranormal investigators. These were the people that were you know, looked up to and that were helping people through situations, whether it was in a home or a business. And there was no gray area. It was pretty much once you understood how this stuff worked and you were comfortable with helping people, interviewing people and dealing with people, then you moved into that area. And now it's just become a complete washout. There is no difference with the ghost tech and the approaches and everything else like that. And you have all these, you know, ghost groups everywhere that do everything the same exact way. And the culture has changed. And, you know, with all the negativity and the attacks on people, and when you have more people in a field, you're going to have a lot more of that. And for me, I've tried to ignore it. You try to ignore and just stick to what you're doing, but it's to a point, you know, about, I shut my group down in 2011. So it's been about 6 years now. It reached a point where the clients were pretty much infected by the culture. They have, like I said, they have an expectation that I'm going to do things a certain way. They expect to see certain tools. They assume that they're not going to have any part of the investigation, that they're going to sit out on the front lawn or watch TV while we do things. And it's just like, no, like this is happening to you, not me. You're part of this process.
And did you ever have anybody ask you where your PKE meter was?
No.
I happen to
know.
No,
that would be, oh, wow.
I'm like, well, they don't exist. And, you know, this fictionalized tools they use in Ghostbusters, you know, some people actually think they're real. Like, I don't know. That shocks me. As my grandfather always said, the hardest tool for people to use is common sense.
Oh, exactly. People, they've never changed their batteries, I think.
All right, so we've spent the last good 45 minutes talking about, you know, all the negative things that we're dealing with and the lack of common sense, the lack of objectivity, and what's missing and where we should be focused on. I'm curious to know, Brian, you've been in this for 20 years. Sean, you've been in this for a long time. I've been in this a long time. What to you, Brian, have you experienced over the years that keeps you involved in this? Has there been experiences in the ghost field or cryptozoology or ufology field where you've really walked away scratching your head and really think, okay, maybe there is something to this? Can you share some of those experiences with us?
I mean, I've seen things. I'm one of these critical thinkers, and unfortunately, sometimes, especially in the ghost field, that kind of works against you, because once you observe something and you start to think about it, it kind of ends. But I've seen things that I can't explain. Shadows in front of me that have no light source. I've seen solid looking objects looking at me down the hallways that I can't explain. I ran down to the edge of this, it was in Oklahoma, in the tuberculosis hospital. I don't even know if it's still standing anymore. This is a long time ago. And I saw this thing out of the corner of my eye, and I looked over, and just as I looked over, I saw it just slowly pull back. And I'm like, what the heck was that? You could tell it was solid because it had a shadow on the wall behind it. And I go running down to the end of the hallway. It took a while. There was a lot of debris and stuff on the floor, and there was nothing there. There was a stairway, but there was no way to get to the door. It was blocked off. There was a lot of tables and chairs that were blocking the whole thing. Nowhere for anyone to hide. And there was dust all over the floor. There were no footsteps, anything. And I didn't say anything for a while. And then I asked one of the people that worked in the building later on about this thing on this. Has anybody ever seen anything? I think it was on the third or fourth level. And they said, oh, you saw the Green Goblin. I was like, wait, what? And they explained, you know, what I had seen. And it was kind of flipped me out a little bit. Like, no, it wasn't common knowledge either. I'd never heard about this thing when I researched this area at all. And they told me, don't tell anybody. But yeah, I'm telling you now, because it was a long time ago. It's probably 18 years ago now. So it was just really weird to see something like that, not be able to explain. It's frustrating. I've seen a few things in the sky that I've not been able to explain, that were moving in ways that should not be able to move. And I love watching satellites. I love looking for satellites. I love IDing satellites that are moving. Especially, you know, you go out certain times at night, you know, just before midnight, usually between sundown and midnight, you could see the satellites moving and they reflect the sunlight. And it's beautiful to see. I know I'm weird. I'm a dork. But I love seeing that kind of stuff. And one night I'm watching, and all of a sudden this thing just stops, moves backwards, and it starts zigzagging and moving in all kinds of weird directions. I blink my eyes thinking, well, maybe it's just my eyes. And I look back up, and it's still doing the same thing. To this day, I have no idea what that was. And it's exciting, though, sometimes when you're stumped. I kind of actually enjoy that, to not have the answer sometimes. Because to me, what it comes down to is solving the mystery. You know, not the big picture of proving what ghosts are and being on the front of Time magazine or anything like that, but case-by-case basis. You know, like this photograph, for example. It really bothers me that I can't figure out what it is. It bugs me. I had to walk away a few times. When I got up this morning, I looked at it again. I left it on my computer. I wanted to figure out what this thing is. It drives me nuts because I like to figure out what's going on behind these things. And whether it's a big case or it's a small photograph, all these things are important to me because it is part of the larger picture. You know, that's why I'm driven to do my radio show week in, week out, looking at these news stories, figuring out the reality behind each news story. Is it really a hoax or is there something legitimate behind it? What's the motivation for somebody doing something? Or why is this researcher looking at thylacine hairs? You know, what's behind all these stories? I just enjoy the mystery. And you have to admit, the paranormal is the hardest thing to ever understand because there are just no answers out there. And I think that's, to me, is the allure, that there is just no answers. And there's so many opinions and there's so many thoughts and there's so many potential explanations that it's just exciting. It's just, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what the proper term would be without saying it's just kind of like thought porn. You know, there's just so much that goes into this that you're not sure what really is going on. And, you know, I love having the answers. I love figuring out things. This you can't figure out no matter how hard you try. It's so elusive and I love it.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I've experienced things paranormal related. I mean, I've got stuff going on in my house right now that I don't have a logical explanation for. I jokingly say my house is haunted, you know, because I just don't know at this point, but I'm not going to take that leap and say it's a ghost or there's spirits in the house. There's something weird going on here. And my wife has heard it. I've heard it. My son's heard it. We've all experienced it. I've had other people in the house that have experienced it too. But again, I don't know what it is. And I think it's fascinating that there's something going on here. I'm not afraid of what's going on in my house. I'm intrigued by it. And it's at points annoying because I'm trying to sleep when some of this stuff happens. But even with the Bigfoot stuff over the years, and Sean can attest to this, he's had his own experiences in the Bigfoot field. There's things that happen when you're out there in the woods. You hear things. On multiple occasions, I've had rocks thrown at me where there's nothing in the thermal FLIR, a heat signature showing an animal or anything there that's throwing the rocks. And there's no rational explanation that I can think of. Or seeing anomalous lights in the forest that you can't explain. Or, like you mentioned, seeing something in the sky that's moving around in different directions that's not logical for a plane or a helicopter or even a satellite that you just can't explain. That stuff to me is thrilling. But I'm so critical and so skeptical of what I experience and what I see is I'm very hard pressed to say it was a Bigfoot or if it was a UFO or it's a ghost. I think it's fascinating and it excites me and I get all, you know, worked up and I'll call Sean or I'll call Lon or one of my friends, I'll tell you about it or like with the game camera photo. I'm like, hey, look at this. See what you think. You know, I'll be very hard pressed to say that's what it was. But I think the mystery of it and the experience that you may have in the forest or in a building or in a cemetery or looking up in the sky, those experiences are thrilling. And that's what keeps me intrigued is to continue to follow it to some degree.
Yeah. And these are all experiences. These are things that are building our knowledge base. You know, that's why I enjoy seeing photographs. I constantly scour the internet looking for stuff like this. And like I said, I follow the news. So I see trail camera photographs and fake UFO pictures and videos and stuff. But it's all part of our experience to see these things. And if we know what the explanation is, that just adds to our knowledge. But, you know, that's only part of it. It's just, like I said, it's the intrigue that keeps me going. It's the mystery behind it. And the fact that a lot of people don't believe in what we do as well is kind of a driving force that, you know, I'm skeptical, but at the same time, I want to believe. I want to believe all this stuff is true, but I'm not going to just jump to that conclusion, like you said, right away. And to be honest with you, I'm highly jealous that you have anomalous phenomena going on in your house. Don't tell my wife this, but I wish it was happening here, because then I wouldn't have to leave my house to study this stuff.
Well, the door is always open, Brian. You're welcome to come down and spend a weekend anytime you want.
Yeah, we have to come down there. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you, Sean? What keeps you motivated and driven?
Well, I think both of you have hit it on the head pretty well. But for me, there's that sense of wonder you get when you're out in the woods and you hear something strange that you can't explain. Or for me, it's still the sighting reports that we get submitted to us from really credible eyewitnesses. And that's just not to say that everybody that's seen these things isn't credible. But when I get somebody from law enforcement or somebody from, you know, fishing game or the DCNR that report to us that they experience something out in the woods and they're out there every day, or hunters that have been hunting for 20 to 30 years and they have an experience one day and they don't want to go out hunting. That stuff is what really keeps me interested, that these people are still experiencing something that magnificent or that terrifying that they don't want to be in the same place, or they just can't identify what they saw. That stuff keeps me going. And I've done it all. You know, we've done ghost and paranormal investigating, Eric. We've done cryptozoology. I really dabbled in UFOlogy. But to me, the end of the day, it's, you know, my heart rests with the unexplained animals that are creatures that people are seeing, that there's no rational explanation for at this point, and there's no real hard evidence. And just being out in nature, right? I don't think there's any bigger thrill than just being out in the outdoors, looking up at the sky and seeing unpolluted, no light polluted skies, and being able to see the things Brian's talking about, the clear view stars. And there's just something relieving about being out away from the everyday stress of the world we live in, because the world's not a great, you know, full of great news anymore. It's full of the day-to-day crap that gets shoveled through us by the mainstream media and the stress of every day. Being out in those places just kind of clears the mind and levels the head, and you're able to experience nature the way it's truly supposed to be experienced. I guess that's what kind of drives me into this still.
And the beautiful thing with cryptozoology or studying undiscovered or unknown animals is that it's more tangible than these other fields. You know, you're, like I said, you know, and Eric said the same thing, you're not investigating a UFO, you're investigating what the witness saw. Mm-hmm. But with a cryptid, you have that opportunity yourself, maybe, just maybe, if you're lucky and you're in the right spot, to witness the stuff yourself and to actually see footprints and potentially broken branches, or, you know, hopefully some scat. That's my biggest thing. I love scat. Yeah, I know I'm weird. But
you have a problem.
We have that opportunity. You know, it's there's more of that tangible evidence versus a ghost, which is, you know, probably more along the lines of a, you know, just a mental interpretation of something, or hallucination, for lack of a better term. And, you know, UFOs are more than likely long gone by the time you ever investigate it. So we have that's the other thing that drew me to cryptozoology too. And it's, I loved, before all this stuff, I loved hiking and backpacking, especially up there in the Allegheny National Forest. Was one of the greatest places I ever backpacked until they started putting all these clear cut in the areas for the wells and stuff. But it's just beautiful to get out there and enjoy it. Then when I started hearing all these stories about stuff in the woods, it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to go there for that too. But like you said, there's no better way to reconnect or disconnect than to reconnect with nature. It's just, there's nothing that can compare to it.
Well, and I think being out there with like-minded individuals and friends, like Eric, when we used to go out for the PBS events, just being able to have a good time and be out there in the woods. And there have been some strange things that have happened to us on these events. When we were out, and I think, was it 2004, 2005, Eric and Keystone, and Tim Cassidy and I had that really strange experience, and we all went into the woods after that. And There was all the excitement. And then we were walking down that power line clearing, and I think it was Norm Ganion. Norm G. Yeah, from Maryland, that took a picture. And there was that strange shape in the woods watching us from the tree line on the other side. We thought whatever we were chasing escaped to. That was interesting. And being out on the Chestnut Ridge, guys, if you being out in the Chestnut Ridge in the middle of the night, is there a creepier place on planet Earth?
I think Brian was with us at Keystone in 2004, 2005, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I can't remember what the year, but yeah, I was out there. We sat up there on the top of the ridge all night long and really didn't see anything. We saw a lot of deer, but it was thrilling to be up there. It was just a beautiful area. And I think that's really the only time I've really been up on the top of the ridge, but just a weird weekend. That whole entire weekend, we saw all kinds of weird stuff, and it's a beautiful area. I mean, definitely, it definitely feels different to be in that area, not just because we were doing what we were doing, but there's definitely something to it, you know, that, you know, it's obviously a hotbed for UFO and cryptid activity. And from what I'm hearing, a lot of ghost stuff as well, but there is a feeling to it when you get up there and you're on the ridge. It's just unexplainable. There is just some sort of, I don't know, weird feeling about it. But I didn't really experience anything completely unique, but there was a lot of stuff that happened that weekend.
Yeah, there's definitely an ambiance to the ridge, that's for sure.
Well, I guess my favorite place to still investigate in that area of Pennsylvania is Gray Station. That's still my favorite place, mainly because it's a challenge to get through there without getting hit by a train.
True. Very true. Very true. Well, gentlemen, we're getting to the end of the program. If we could, before we say goodnight, Brian, I'd like, if you could, to give us a recap of what's going on with you. You have your radio show that you do weekly, and you have an upcoming event in February that I'd like you to give us some more detail about.
Yeah, I'm the host of the Paranormal News Insider, which is heard every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern on WCJBRadio.com. Been doing that show for, gosh, it'll be 10 years next year. So I don't know. I'm either crazy or dedicated. I don't know which. But I enjoy doing the radio show because I enjoy doing the research. Because whether I'm doing a radio show or not, I'm reading all this stuff and I'm thinking about it and disseminating it. So why not do a radio show? Also, yes, I'm doing a convention conference, the Twinsburg Paranormal Convention. And the craziest thing about it is I'm doing it in Ohio in February, which is why I didn't invite a lot of people like Jay Bachochin and yourself, Eric, because I didn't want to put you on that to have to come out to snowy Northeast Ohio. Didn't want to, you know, kind of put that pressure. I was trying to draw people from here in Ohio and not making people drive too far. And I think I've done a pretty darn good job of bringing some great people together for this conference. So if you're in the Northeast Ohio area and you're willing to brave the snow and the cold in February, on February 17th of 2018, we'll be hosting the first ever Twinsburg Paranormal Conference. And it's in a good location. There's state routes and interstates very close to this location. So they should be plowed even if there is weather. Three cryptid speakers, two UFO speakers, and two very, very good ghost speakers. So I'm looking at every angle, really excited. I've never done this before, but I've been involved in a number of events, from cryptid events, these two wonderful events that were put on in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Not doing anything like that, but a lot of speakers and a lot of vendors will be there that should satisfy your thirst and your hunger to find out the paranormal stuff. And as far as my appearances, I've only got one left for the year. That's going to be a week from this Tuesday, December 5th. I'll be on the Mallard Report with host Jim Mallard. Hopefully nothing will go wrong. I could be on the air for that show. I'd like to close my year out successfully without having to reschedule. But appreciate you hanging in there and bringing me back. Been a pain in the ass, I guess, for
not at all
bringing your internet down or whatever.
But, not at all.
I don't know. I'm going to start getting a reputation. Don't have that guy on your show. Fault,
and you be damned for doing this. No,
I gotta invest in some chickens or something that I can just sacrifice for a show. Something.
Actually, it's the BTE radio curse. It has nothing to do with you, Brian. It's Bill Bean's fault.
I'm blaming Bill.
Yeah. We've been on for 10 years. Sean and I co-founded the show together back in 2007, and we just celebrated our 10th year on the air. And Sean was a co-host, hosted the show, co-hosted, color commentator for a good 7-8 years during the show while we were on. And Sean can tell you how many nights we've had technical difficulties, phone connection difficulties, Skype problems. It's a curse. That's all I can say.
At this point in time, I don't know why listeners still get upset. I mean, eventually they get a good show. So
Sooner or later.
They just have to roll with the punches. This is free, folks. It's free.
Right.
That is true. That's any information anybody wants to get a hold of me or see what I'm doing, BrianDParsons.com. Got my own website.
And check him out on Facebook, too. You can find Brian on Facebook as well as the Paranormal News Insider. And a lot of great information there. Pick up his books. They're on the website. And check out the Twinsburg, Ohio Paranormal Conference coming up in February. If weather holds out, Brian, I'm going to do my best to get over to see you guys.
Oh, wow. That would be awesome.
I'd love to come over and hang out with you for the day. That'd be cool. Brian, thank you for coming on tonight. Thank you so much for your patience dealing with our technical issues and coming back as many times as you have without saying, screw you guys.
Oh, heck no.
We appreciate it, and always great to talk to you, my friend. And as we continue into 2018 with the podcasting, we'll definitely have you back for a show along the way. So keep your calendar open, my friend.
Oh, I will. I will. Definitely. I enjoy being on here. I love talking with you guys. I mean, it's kind of a pleasant surprise to have Sean here on the show, which is awesome. It's kind of stepping back in time for the show, but truly, truly awesome. Great conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I love these kinds of conversations.
Well, me too. It was my pleasure to be here and to be able to assist Eric with this. And it was great to talk to you. And now the listeners know how they can get a hold of you and send you more great information. Check them out, folks.
That's right. Brian, have a great night. And we'll catch up with you again soon, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
Take care. Well, Sean, we've come to the end of tonight's podcast. Although it was supposed to be a live show, as the curse rolls on, we found out that our live connection wouldn't connect. So we decided to do the show anyways, podcast-wise, and grateful for Brian being part of the show with us tonight, and grateful for you being part of the show with us tonight.
Oh, I'm so glad we had this time together.
Okay, Carol.
It was great. A lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Really did. It was nice talking to Dr. Parsons, wonderful talking to you. Great to be here in my old chair and just having a good time, putting in a few jokes in there. Yes, folks, I make jokes. I'm a dad now. They're dad jokes, so get over it. And I mean, it's just been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed myself. Thanks for reaching out to me, asking me to come back. And Marie, I hope you get better soon. I don't like to see anybody sick, and especially with ear things. Ears are
horrible.
Bug me.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll send out our speedy get well wishes to Marie. Hopefully she's back on her feet and back to joining us soon. But if not, then, Sean, you're always welcome to come back and help me host the show or the podcast and whatever we're doing here at BTE Radio.
I'm just a message away. And I guess we should send a special shout out for the last 10 years of Beyond the Edge Radio to our special friends out there, Mr. Joe Biello, Ms. Monica Rollins, Mr. Lon Strickler,
of course,
James Baker, everybody that's been on this, Marie, everybody that's been on this, Scott, how can we forget Scott?
Scott Hackenslash.
The crazy road with us. Scott Hackenslash, paranormal sci-fi news and movie reviews. It's been great to have these people with us for the last 10 years bringing you the best in paranormal talk radio.
That's right.
Alternative talk radio at its finest, folks. Beyond the Edge Radio.
And on that note, we shall say goodnight. And until next time, thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Sean. And again, thank you, Brian, for joining us. And you guys have a great week. And we'll see you again next Sunday.